Where I live, golf is seasonal, which means when the snow hits the ground, my clubs are sequestered to the garage, only to be used in the sim until next spring. Given the chance, though, I'll attempt to play in just about any weather as long as the course will let me on. I'm looking at you, Lightning Storms. But I remember a round with JP earlier this year, right when the courses were opening for the season, so we knew there was a chance of getting rained out before we had hit our first drives. However, the day was promising and the sun was shining, even if it was a touch chilly, so we thought we were in the clear. But as we made the turn and got ready to tee off on hole 10, it was like someone took the world's curtains and closed them across the sky. The temperature had to have dropped about 20 degrees, and soon we were being pelted with an icy snow-hail mix. We kept on though, getting colder and colder with every hole, trying to ignore the numbness in our hands and the high numbers on our scorecards. And it made me think of the proverbial postman's creed, which I've modified slightly for all the crazy golfers like me that are out there. Neither snow, nor rain, nor heat, nor gloom of night will keep the golfer from the completion of their round. So let us know, what's the worst weather you've ever played golf in? This is For the Record.
Golf, the hardest game we love to play. These are the ramblings of three nerdy golfers.
Our continuing mission? Explore strange new swing techniques to seek out lower handicaps and awesome golf courses.
And to boldly swing where a safe layup would have been the smarter choice.
Welcome to another episode of For the Record. Thank you for joining us today. We've got a packed episode in front of us. We're going to be doing a Remember When, an At the Turn, and we have a mystery box that is sitting on the table. I'm very excited to
mystery
see
box.
What's...
Mystery box. We got us a mystery box.
I'm excited to see what's in the mystery box. But before we do any of that, we've got a recap. There's been some history since the last time we did. We had a round today, and we have had some medical travails. And so, Cody... What's been going on?
Yeah, so the last time we talked and recorded on this podcast, John Paul was about ready to go in for some major neck surgery, and as you hear by his voice, he's alive, and he has survived.
Yes.
He had a head transplant.
Nobody dies.
Yep. His new body is amazing.
And we knew that he's going to be out for a couple of months after that. That's not a surprise. However, last Monday, I also went in for surgery to have a kidney stone removed. Now, if any of you listeners out there have ever had a kidney stone, it is the single most painful thing I've ever experienced in my life. I would not wish that on my worst enemies, and I have many.
Oh, you have worst enemies? Wow.
But it is so painful, and they give you meds to deal with it, and they just barely take the edge off.
I know. And I was recovering from major, we came to visit you, and I was recovering from major spinal surgery, and I think you looked worse than I did.
It was pretty bad. And, well, that's the thing, is that I got an x-ray, yep, there's a kidney stone, and doctor's like, we can surgically remove it. And I remember passing a kidney stone naturally and how bad that is. So I'm like, yeah, let's do surgery. The surgery's just as bad. Nobody tells you that. Yeah. So it was a miserable week. I am doing so much better now. But for about a week there, I was very sad and pathetic looking.
I felt pretty bad visiting because neither of you could stand up straight. You're both hunched over and looked terrible. And I was like, I feel great. I don't know.
you guys come to the door and half of me was just kind of like, why are you here?
My wife and I, when we were cookies. Driving over to your house, we were actually joking about Eric and his family. And we're like, do you think he's going to start looking for less damaged friends?
We're past the expiration date. He needs an upgraded model.
He needs some people, you know, that can stand up and function.
But the good news is that we got a round in today. Not you, John Paul. Eric and I got to go and play.
Hold on. We gave your update, how you're doing. John Paul, could we take a second and go over how he's doing?
All we said is he's alive. That what else is there?
I'm doing very well, thank you. I have basically traded lava hot searing pain down my left arm, finger and thumb, and extreme discomfort in my neck for essentially no pain of any kind. The nerves have been basically completely destroyed, and so I have no feeling at all. It's like the feeling that you get with Novocaine where your face is asleep after you come back from the dentist, but it's basically down my left arm. It's annoying, but it's so much better than the pain that I'll take it all day. And
yeah, it sounds
sensation will probably eventually return, but even if it doesn't, I'm down. I'm cool. I feel like I could swing a golf club tomorrow. I haven't, and I can't. I haven't been cleared to do that. But I think the recovery will be smooth and speedy.
I'm just picturing you in my head from the day before you went into surgery, how you were not, like, moving. You could not stand up straight. Your head was hunched over, and you looked sad and pathetic.
You were pretty in a bad
and
spot.
And today, you're mobile. Like, you're up there. Your head's straight up in the air, and it's good.
Yep, you're looking great.
Just thank you to the glories of modern medicine.
Absolutely.
I'm very grateful.
Yes.
Anyway.
Now on to the round that we played today. So John Paul couldn't play, so Eric and I played a round. And now Eric has a season-long goal if he wants to beat John Paul and myself straight up in stroke play. And Eric's been on a bit of a run lately. He's been playing significantly better. And I've been playing decently, so he hasn't caught up. So today was a good chance for him to do so. And he enlisted the help of John Paul. Since John Paul can't play, what did you do instead?
Eric sent me a nice text, and he threw the caddy talisman my way. And so I was enlisted today. Being unable to play myself, I can still caddy and perform the functions of a caddy. And we rode today and went out to play 9 holes, and I came prepared. I had my range finder and a wet towel and a dry towel. I had snacks. I had drinks. I had everything ready to go. I was ready to be my very best caddying self. And I have to say, it's a lot of fun. But what made it more special is that when we arrived at Cody's house to pick him up, he had prepared a caddy bib that has our For the Record logo on the back. And so I felt it's got pockets in the front for range finders and scorecards. I had the yardage book out. It felt legit. It was awesome. I had a great feeling caddying, and it was a lot of fun.
And just to give a quick recap for those that may not remember, in episode 1 or 2, we brought up the idea of having a talisman that we could, throughout the summer, hand to any one individual and have them be on the bag as a caddy for us. And I've been holding on to it. I don't know how we decided that I would be the one, but I was given the talisman at the beginning, and I've been holding on to it for the summer for this exact reason, because I knew John Paul wasn't going to be able to play. And when it gets hotter, Cody, sometimes he gets too hot and can't play. And so I thought I would hold on to it to then, and then in the fall, it could be used for me because I get too cold. So
yeah, it's perfect time. And the round started off really well for you today. You started with a par, and I started with a double bogey. And we traded back and forth for the next,
had
4 or 5 or 6 holes.
Had 2 of the best par threes that I've ever had on our, 12th? No, 13th.
13. Mm-hmm.
There is a hole over water, and there is a tee box that they have hidden back in the trees. And the first time we played it, all 3 of us hit a tree. This time,
the only time we played back there.
Well, until today. And then we played it today, and I was able to get out and on the green. It was a little long, but short was in the water, so I was happy to be long.
Beautiful, beautiful thing. And I want to talk just a little bit about Eric's round before we get into any more details and just say that it felt kind of different today. I mean, particularly the first hole. We picked a spot. We had a line. You nailed a nice, smooth drive right to the layup spot that we did. We talked about the yardage when we came to the second shot. Put it right in the middle of the green. 2-putt par, 0 drama at all. And just from that moment, we were like, oh, this is going to be a good round.
And this was an answer to a question that we posed when I brought this up however many episodes ago. The question was, do you think that if one of us caddied for the other one, you would play any better? And from the limited run that we saw today, I think the answer is a resounding yes.
Oh, absolutely.
And we decided a couple of reasons. One, it gives you a chance to bounce ideas off of somebody so that you feel more committed in your shot. And also, I feel like it makes you take it more seriously.
Yeah, I would agree with that. John Paul thinks of things that I don't think of when he picks a club. Like, he shoots a distance on a rangefinder and shouts it out, and I go, oh, I need this club. But today he was on the bag for me, so he was like, oh, it is that distance, but wind is helping and it's downhill. You want this club instead. And so I played that club and I hit it the exact distance that we wanted.
And I think one of the mental facets of the game of golf is really, really brought into focus when you're playing with a caddy, because I got to be the caddy today. Whenever we're on the course, one of the most difficult things about the game of golf is committing to a shot, like knowing exactly what you're going to play, exactly how you're going to do it, and visualizing that shot. And I think when you're talking through that with a caddy, it forces you to commit to a shot. It doesn't necessarily improve your chances of executing that shot, but at least you're committed. You're not waffling back and forth. You know what you're doing. You have an image in your head. And I think that has to be helpful.
And I think it was also hugely helpful for putting. Sometimes you're kind of like, I guess it would be around here. But then you said, here, hit to this point. And I was like, okay, I will hit to that exact point. And I did almost every time.
Your lag putting was a much better today. Just getting it in the vicinity of the hole so you had an easy second putt, I noticed.
Yeah, it was a great time.
The only element of the game that was, there were only two things that could have improved today's round for you. One is there were a couple of chips that got away from you. And part of that's probably my fault because I decided to get all fancy with your wedges and changed your wedges before, you know, the round may not have been the best idea. But I think the other thing that really could have helped your round today would be different weather.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, we didn't go over that, but we only were able to hit six holes.
Yeah. In the middle of the sixth hole that we were playing, it had been threatening to rain the entire evening. And then all of a sudden, it just started coming down heavy. And we're like, okay, rain, no big deal. And then we heard the horns from the clubhouse of lightning.
From Valhalla.
They were calling us in. And so we finished that hole out and then drove back to the clubhouse to try and figure out, okay, are we waiting this out or what are we doing? And we just got pelted with, I don't know. It felt like it turned into hail for a little bit. Yeah. I don't know what it was. It was painful.
That ride back to the clubhouse was one of the worst rides of my life because they don't have screens or anything in our golf carts. And so we were just getting pelted. It hurt so bad. And
Eric and I were sitting next to each other. We're like, ow, 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 ow.
And we all wear glasses.
Yeah,
so
I could not see through my glasses.
We were all blind.
We get to the clubhouse and we go in and we're like, how long? And he's like, maybe 10, 15 minutes. And then we all look on our weather apps and we're like, it's probably at least 20, 25. And he offered us a rain check for, you know, to come back and play a full nine at another time. And we all just kind of decided, let's do the rain check.
We were so wet.
Even if we got back out there, we would have been cold and we would have had to like re-get into it. And so we did not get a score counting round tonight.
But here's the punchline and the big takeaway is that through six holes, Eric ended on a par, on the par three, after the buzzer blew, hit the green in regulation, standard two putt, very nice lag putt, just a tap in, no nonsense par. Cody saved the most miraculous par of all time on that hole. I can't believe you parred that.
I sunk
that.
A 20-footer.
It was a snake. It was amazing. But the score was 30 through six holes, which is seven over par through six holes. That's just slightly worse than bogey golf. We calculated that it would have ended in a 46 if we'd been able to finish the round. But he was one stroke better than Cody when we walked off. So there was a good chance that Eric was going to beat Cody today.
Possibly, because it's really hard to say. A stroke could go in either direction in three holes.
But
what this has brought to my attention is when we do a scramble, we need to do it differently. Because when we do a scramble, we're basically, as a team, like, oh, let's do this. I think we need to think of it as I'm caddying for the other two.
Yeah. And really talk through each shot.
Yeah, because we give a read, but we don't say, like, hit it here and, like, things like that. And I think that would be really helpful.
Yeah. And I think that we decided that maybe not next week, but the week after, you'll get another shot at this, Eric, to take
we'll
me
see.
Down.
Yeah, and we determined, because we were unable to finish the round, that the caddy talisman stands. My caddying for Eric is not at an end. We're gonna take another run at Cody at some time in the future. We're gonna finish the job.
I will say I'm happy that you were playing a good round, and I had a couple get away from me, but I played decently. If you're gonna get a better score than me, I want you to earn it.
Well, yeah, and I know, was.
But when you beat John Paul, he had a couple blow-up rounds where you scored good and he just did terribly. And if you're going to beat me, I want you to beat me where I'm playing well, not because I screwed up.
That's fair.
That's fair. And I think if it had ended with him beating you by one stroke today, I think we could easily have said it, because 46 is an excellent round for Eric.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. I'd be happy with a 46 on my handicap card right now. So
yeah, I'm like, my target right score right now is like 44 through 46. I'm aiming right around there. Obviously I would love lower, but that's realistically what I'm aiming for when I think of a good scoring round.
I did much better with greens and reg today than I have in the past.
And I think also, just before we move on from this, we were worried when we brought the caddy talisman into play that it would be, oh, we're depriving the other guy of playing golf. Of course it's convenient right now because I'm injured and I can't play anyway. I'm going to tell you, as long as you know in advance, it's fun. It putting on that bib, walking around, grabbing the flag, reading for somebody else. I enjoyed the heck out of it. It would be good. I feel like even if I was in peak condition, if I'd been out there caddying today, I'd have had a great time. It would not have detracted from my experience.
So we got paired with a fourth today, and we're just, you know, introductions and everything. And John Paul's like, I'm caddying, by the way. I'm not playing for this guy. And the guy just looks at him. He's like, I can tell.
Yeah, we'll post it on the socials, the caddy bib plays. It's pretty great.
It was great.
It's pretty awesome. And now we have ourselves an at the turn. And for this one, I wanted to talk specifically to JP. You've had yourself neck surgery. You're out for the next little while. What are you doing to prepare yourself mentally and physically? Or if you have any routines, how are you preparing to get back on the course?
This is such a good question. And I have actually been thinking about it a little bit, probably partially motivated by the fact that we have a podcast and we're creating content, but I know I'm going to get back in before the end of the season. I'm still 4 to 6 weeks out, probably realistically, from being able to swing a golf club well enough to play a round.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that I can't do anything with golf. And I think today's caddying experience was excellent for mental game. It was really interesting caddying today because we had to talk through each of your shots. We had to talk through each of the scenarios and think about each shot. But what's really interesting is when you're a caddy, you're in charge of taking care of the person who you're working with. You're taking care of their mental game. And so you have to kind of force yourself. We talked about it. And either it was executed properly and it went perfectly, in which case you celebrate a little bit and you move on to the next shot, or it didn't go the way you were hoping it would go. And then you just find the ball and you plan another shot. Mm. You have to let it go and you can't dwell on the bad. And if your guy is dwelling on the bad, you have to be like, nope, we're just focusing on the next shot. We're 100% focused. Man, if I can do that to myself, if I can make that internal speak work for myself, it'll be huge for my mental game when I return.
Yeah.
Can I tell you, so you guys today, John Paul and Eric, I hear you deliberating together a little bit when you're talking about, you know, the shot and where to aim your putts and everything. And I felt like I was missing from that. Because when I walked up to my ball and I'd look and be like, okay, I'm about this far and I need to hit this. And then I look around and be like, is that right? To nobody around me? Like, there is legitimate something to be said to having someone to bounce an idea off of. And we do that when we play casually together, but since you were acting in like a caddy capacity, mm-hmm. it treated it a little bit more formal.
Yeah.
And it made a difference.
I feel like the opposite of that can also be true though, because last week, I guess it was a couple of weeks ago, the last time we all played together, you and John Paul were in a cart together. The two of you kept hitting in a relatively similar area and I was off on my own playing by myself. And I felt like I was able to focus so much more because I wasn't distracted by like chatting with other people. I was so focused on my game and yes. I felt like I played very well that day.
This comes back to the exact point that I was trying to make. So it's a situation where I find myself on the course unfocused. Mm. And I know that sounds crazy. You think, oh, will you focus on the game of golf? I love golf and I love having a good time on the course. And I don't ever want to detract from having a good time on the course. But there's something different when you're dialed in and you're super focused on a round. So when I was talking about caddying, it doesn't necessarily mean I need to have a caddy or I need to have somebody to bounce it around, but I need to caddy for myself. Mm. I have to make myself focus on each shot. I can't throw shots away. And I think if I can get myself mentally to that place, last week, Cody and I were both medically unavailable for golf. And I know that you didn't take the opportunity to go out. And Cody and I had a discussion because we were out running an errand at the same time. And I just said, you know what? I kind of wish he'd gone. I know you had a lot of things going on, but there's something about golfing alone, and you haven't done much of it.
I've never done it.
Cody and I have golfed alone a lot, and there's a level of focus when you are by yourself that is different. And I think some point during the season, there's going to be a time where Cody and I both have to tap out. Take the opportunity. Don't tell your wife that you're going alone. Just we'll lie for you or whatever.
She never listens to this podcast.
Oh, good.
Of course. Okay, we're safe. She does. She totally does. Huh?
No, but just go and go through the mental exercise of golfing alone and get that hyper-focus. You're not worrying about Cody. You're not worrying about me. You're just worrying about you. And I think I need to get to that point too mentally with my game. The other big thing that I really want to take away from this is it was hard for me not to swing a golf club today. I'm being very good. I'm being super cautious. I had a bad experience in the past where I didn't give something enough time to heal, and I did damage, and it was not good. And so I've learned my lesson. I'm being very conservative. But I can tell you right now, I can get to my left side. Right now, I can get to my left side.
Mm.
I can't make a full turn, and I'm not going to try. But I have been in so much pain for so long. When I come out of this, I am going to go after some speed. And I know I said this at the beginning of the year, it kind of got derailed, but we've played now.
What could possibly have derailed your...
We have now been paired with two individuals of advanced age that were both significantly older than we are, and they could both swing the club with some aggression, like literally with some speed. I have always been a smooth golfer. I have a weird swing. It's very strange. It's cobbled together because of various injuries that I've sustained.
It looks fine.
But those people have way stranger swings than I do. And they have found a way to add speed right at the bottom, at the point of impact with the ball. I don't need to chase like a ton of speed, but my game would be vastly improved if I could come in at a higher trajectory. And the only way I'm getting a higher trajectory is with higher club head speeds. And now that I am on the mend and I'm no longer injured, I'm going to spend the fall when I'm back in getting my swing repeatable again. And come wintertime when we get into the sim and we're in the off season, I'm going to chase speed.
Okay,
cool. Can I add two things to your comments that have popped into my head while we're talking? One, about mental fatigue in golf. I was thinking of our Wasatch round with our buddy Brandon. Shout out to him again. We talked about him on the last episode. But he mentioned even towards the end of our 18, he had a couple of mental lapses, mm-hmm. and he's just like, oh, I'm just losing focus. And when it's like, you're out on a golf round, it's sure, it could be physically tiring, but it's mentally tiring to stay in the zone that long.
It is.
And so it's hard to do that. So I think being a caddy for yourself is, you almost have to like practice at it to be able to sustain it for that long. And the other thing that I was going to add is, as I was looking at the show notes here, I misread what you had written, Eric. And I was thinking, you know, not just like, how will John Paul prepare to get back into the golf game? But I was taking it as, how do you prepare each round to get ready to go into playing golf for the day?
Mm.
And today, you text me this morning, and you're like, hey, it's golf day! And I was like, yes, it is! And I was like, that is a good start to like a positive attitude towards I get to go golf, and that already is in the mindset.
Yeah.
To get you in a good position to be there. And then like some things that I do, we talked about the stretching and kind of our yoga-esque physical warm-ups, but also mentally, like I tell myself, okay, like I try and switch to, I don't know, like athlete mode to know that I'm going to be outside in the heat and it's okay. I'm going to deal with it. And I'm going to hydrate beforehand. And so I make sure I'm ultra hydrated before we go and play around. All these things kind of lead up to how I prep for a round. I thought it was more of like each week, not long term, but
no, yeah, either way.
That's really good. And I think it's really interesting that in all of our extensive preparations, particularly me, like prepping to be Eric's caddy today, I had applesauce and nuts and all kinds of snacks that I thought would be appealing to him in the bag. Like everything was all ready to go. None of us brought an umbrella.
Yeah.
Nobody had an umbrella.
It hasn't rained in so long
it's
here.
It's Utah in the middle of the summer. It does not rain here in the summer. This is the weirdest thing that, it's so strange.
Can I give you some feedback for something that I think would be helpful for you?
Yes, all day long.
I think you are at a point with your body that you're almost in physical makeup, very close to me. I have been working on trying to put on more muscle. I think you need to do that as well. You've lost a lot between surgeries and things like that. And if you're going after speed the way that you are talking about, mm-hmm. I think you almost need to do a DeChambeau and just get yourself. I mean, that Brandon, he had arms like trees.
You got to bulk up, my friend.
I've been trying.
You are not wrong. Yeah.
I mean, obviously, look at my arms. I'm so much bigger now.
No, but but you make a valid point. And here's the issue is that for the listeners, as background, I was a mechanic as a young man. That's how I made my way through college as an automotive mechanic. And so I worked on cars every day, and I did like a million oil changes. When I was in college, just before I got married, I could crush an oil filter in my right hand, just crush it like a can. That takes force. Like I had, Rachel joked when we were married that I had Popeye arms, these big old Popeye arms for crushing things. Since I've worked in education, but annoyingly, the injury on my right side atrophied my right arm really badly. And so I had one arm that was way skinnier than the other. And then now it's my left arm that's been quasi-paralyzed for a long time now. And at least I'm symmetrical now, but I have been left with useless sticks. I have no grip strength. I have no like power strength. Like,
and if we put our arms next to each other, we're pretty close at this point.
We're pretty close. And like I don't know if I could do a pull-up right now.
Yeah.
Like I literally don't know if I could do a pull-up. And that's, for me, that's very unusual because that's not my usual body makeup. And so I do have to go, part of chasing speed is going to be chasing strength.
Do we need to do a challenge this winter together to somehow motivate each other to build muscle?
I don't think that's a bad idea at all. And I think maybe even more than a challenge thing, I have an exercise room in my basement. If I can ever get all the crap out of it from remodeling down there. But I need to pick a day where I do strength training. I probably need to do some stuff every day, but I need to pick one day a week where I really, really hit it hard. And if there's any way that every once in a while the two of us can get together to do that, I think that would be good for us.
Yeah,
man,
like an
exclusionary club. Jeez.
You do not have this problem.
You don't have the same problem. But if you want to come and like, you
work
know,
out anyway.
Do
you want a motivator? Come on, get it to your system. Lift it up. Pump it, guys.
Get you a little whip.
What's in the
box?
Yeah, not a what's in the bag today. What's in the box? Because unlike the previous episode, like it was very early on in the season, when I tricked you guys with the introduction of the Green Warden.
Yeah, you told us we had fan mail.
Which was awesome, by the way.
Which
totally
was,
worth
still
it.
Still turned out really
it was
well.
Pretty great.
I legit have a physical box in front of me that I don't know what's inside that I did not ship to myself. That is legit fan mail.
And on the label it says two.
Two for the record.
Yes, it does.
Yes.
And it's a box that's about what? What would you say? 12 inches by 8 inches
by 9, by 8.
Something like that.
It is not insignificant. It has good heft.
Oh, we need to know what's in
this
box.
I do know the sender. Mm-hmm. It's my brother. You guys know him too.
Yeah.
We played golf with him.
We have.
Poor guy.
Why?
Because he had to play golf with us.
Well, he had to play with John Paul's old Nike driver.
His old
that's
crappy
right. He
driver.
Played with the SQ.
Yeah.
I think I'm the only person on the planet that can hit that driver.
So we're going to open this box and see what's inside because I don't know. Tyler, you are freaking awesome. Thanks for sending this over.
Oh, you make us very happy.
Well, we don't know what it is yet. You know, hold the making happy till we find out what it is.
It's nothing.
I know what these are.
Birdie Bevs?
No, we've got some birdie.
Birdie Bevs. Birdie Bevs. You got lots of birdie Bevs.
Do you have a razor blade or opener or something?
Yeah.
You have to tell him thank you for us. That's really sweet. That's super nice of him.
Yeah, these are packaged very well.
So we've got five. He sent us five different ones. We're each going to open it.
Yeah, I'm going to let you open one, and then we'll trade off. So I opened one, Eric. In case you didn't see, I got a Cicero Beverage Co. Salted Caramel Root Beer.
Behold the river of caramel.
That sounds super tasty.
Look at that river of caramel flowing through the city.
Oh, man. I'm excited. Do you know where he got these?
I actually do. Now that I know what they are, I'm like, oh, root beers. There is a restaurant. It's not super close to where he lives, but they have one of the best burgers I've ever had. And they just have a wall full of all of these random sodas. If I were a betting man, I'm guessing that he got them from there.
Look at this. He sent us a diet option. This is called Diet Dang.
Wait, what's the right below? Dang, that's good.
That's good. Dang, that's good. Diet, dang, that's good.
Dang, that mash looks tasty.
Mm.
Excellent. Oh, what is that?
Zuber Fizz?
Zuber Fizz?
Creamy root beer. Oh, this looks nice.
Zuber Fizz.
Classic draft soda, Durango Soda Company Incorporated. Twist this.
Ooh.
Okay, I got another one. We got us a Mason's root beer. Yeah. Oh, I'm excited to give that one. Like, the more basic the label, the better you know it's going to be.
Okay, last one.
Ooh.
Ooh, this is Empire Bottling Works root beer. Cane sugar. That looks good, too. Look at the deep.
Oh, I've seen that one.
That looks good. Well, I got to say, none of these are mainstream root beers, so these are some obscure ones. I'm excited. Huge shout out. Thank you so much.
Yeah, these are amazing. We need to send them some stickers.
I already did.
Nice.
Yeah. My goodness. Yes.
That's cool.
Thank you so much. We are going to have to get these cold and give them a taste and get them rated.
Tasty,
that is awesome.
Tasty.
I love our Birdie Bev segment. Is just it makes me so happy.
Yeah.
Because we don't get birdies very often when we golf together. It's just when it happens, it's cause for celebration. And this on this segment, when we record every other week or so, I feel like it just gives us a reason to celebrate anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
It does. Free celebration.
So yes, thank you again, Tyler. You're awesome.
It's time for another Remember When, and today we are remembering a very special event that involves our friend Cody. And
special?
Yes.
It was a special moment.
It was a special moment. Eric, why don't you give us a brief recap of this wonderful moment? And
so this was a round in which Cody was having a particularly rough time with his putter.
I will say that I used to get quite angry on the course. Not as much lately. Give me some credit there.
You are doing a lot better. This was last year?
A couple of years ago. I think it's a year and a half, 2 years ago, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. I used to get really angry when things were not going my way, which was quite often as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we were playing on the front nine, and we got to hole six, which is a long par five. And it's kind of uphill. Cody got to the green, and he was putting around. I think you had three-putted at that point?
Maybe. I'd been putting horribly all day.
It was a little bit of ping-pong on the putter surface there, and he lost it. And he decided that that ball was done, and he smacked it with everything he had with his putter. It went across the fairway of the hole next to us, through it, and through the fence on the other side. He hit that harder than he had hit his driver that day.
I feel really bad because, one, that's an incredibly dangerous thing to do, hitting it the wrong way cross field on a golf course. Not cool at all. So I take full blame for that. And the worst part about it, Eric, that's not the first time I've done that.
Are you serious?
No, it's not. I always worry about your putter when you do that. Like I feel like there's enough force to bend your putter.
So I was playing a course with Parker, who's been on the show, and his father, and I had not been having a good round, and I had let my angry feelings get the better of me, and I think I had like 5-putt on a hole.
Oh, man.
I was playing very bad. And I remember picking up the ball out of the hole, walking away like 5 feet, tossing it into the air like a baseball, and just taking a swing with my putter and hitting it midair as it was coming down, and it flew, and I never to be seen again. It sailed so far. And Parker was laughing because he's like, I can't believe he did that. And Parker's dad just looked at me and just kind of shook his head. Like
head shake.
Like Lee Trevino in Happy Gilmore when he loses it. And he's just kind of like, And he did that to me. And I was like, oh, my bad.
That's funny. So, you know, I think it happens to everybody where we do things that we're ashamed of on the golf course. This last week, I was watching the news. I've tried really hard to get into Camp Brooks Koepka. I might have judged him harshly in, you know, previously, and I wonder if I maybe haven't given him a shot. He lost his temper last week in Dallas, and he hit marker at a fan. And I understand that things like that happen. I think what defines you as a golfer is not whether or not you blow up. I think we all do at times. It's how you respond to that afterwards. I think he could have apologized. I think he should have said he was sorry.
What about Wyndham Clark destroying the locker room?
Yeah.
Over at the Open.
Same thing.
Not cool. Not the Open. The U.S. Open.
Just put your hand in the air and say you're sorry.
Well, and he pretty much just said, like, I'd like to move on from this. But I'm like, you destroyed the locker room in a very prestigious club. Like, that is more than just a, oops, my bad. I want to move on now.
Who was it that hit the sprinkler and was immediately just like, oh, that was so dumb.
I don't know. But
was it Justin Thomas?
But it's a good question that, like, losing your anger on the golf course, there are examples of a lot of even professionals do it. And granted, there's probably quite a bit difference when every shot is the difference of several hundred thousand dollars.
Or millions.
Yeah, but I just don't know if you can justify in having good character if you can't maintain that composure even in your losses.
Yeah.
I would say that the angriest that I've ever been on the golf course was just when I told John Paul to stop talking.
That's true.
I don't hit.
You're by far the least volatile of the three of us. There's no question. But it is an interesting thing to ponder, and I think we all get better at this with time. But it is kind of fun to think back on the embarrassing things that we've done.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you feel like you do when you're angry that you wish you wouldn't, that we could help you with?
So we've talked about the goggles do nothing and the shark repellent spray. That even just knowing that option's out there is honestly helped. And even so I didn't really get angry today at all when we played. However, I could tell that for brief glimpses, John Paul being your caddy, he was intentionally trying to get under my skin a little bit. And I could tell.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was obvious.
And I had to just tell myself and be like, oh, gosh, don't let it get to you. And then I flipped it in my head. I was like, that means that you're in his head.
Yep.
Like, and little things like that. And then I had to tell myself and be like, even if this is like a little mini competition, it's a fun one. And I really like these guys. So even if things start going south, you can enjoy this. And I'm trying to have that perspective more.
That's what I've tried to do as well.
Going back to your question, Eric, I have one that I do need help with, and I think probably all golfers do this. We talked about earlier focusing and keeping your focus on the course, keeping your focus on the round. My worst tendency when I get angry on the golf course, when I get seething, you know, I'm not like the Tasmanian devil. I'm not like Satan or evil or anything of that nature, but I do have times where I get a little hot. I think all of us do.
as a golf cartwheeler test?
I throw shots away. Mm. Like I'll go up to a shot, mm-hmm. like I hit a bad one and I'll just walk up to the next one and just whack it. You know what I mean? And I don't do my pre-shot routine and I don't think through the shot and I'm not thinking strategically about the hole. I'm so distracted from just the bad outcome of the previous shot. I think the easiest way to do this is the second chip. Like when you hit the first chip and it's short and you didn't quite make it to the green or something, the tendency is just to walk up with the same club and just try and whack it again, right? The same club might be the correct choice, but am I really thinking about that shot? Am I really thinking, is this a 58? Is it a 52? Do I want to go high? Do I want to go low? What's my landing point on the green? I'm not going through all that thought process. I'm just ticked off that I missed the first chip and I'm just going to go whack it onto the green with the second one and I lose shots that way.
I had that exact scenario happen to me today on 11. I had probably a 60-yard approach with my 52.
After a great drive.
And I chipped it and it was short. I was probably a foot from the fringe. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't putt it. I had to do another chip. But I had that exact same thought because I walked up and I was like, no, give a couple practice swings because the lie is going to be a little bit different from where you just were, even if you were back, you know, a bit. And it paid off because I was able to chip it within 4 feet.
Yeah. And so I think it's just that it's something where that's where the shark repellent spray would be really handy or a call out would be like that. If you see a guy rushing and not taking his time, and it may seem thankless in that moment because they may be like, yeah, whatever, I'm thinking about it, but they probably aren't. And they'll probably thank you later after the round saying, you know what, thank you for stopping me. That probably saved me a stroke.
I don't know if you remember, John Paul, but back before Eric was golfing very much with us, you and I would go occasionally, and there were many rounds where I would hit a putt and just miss and then just walk up and hit another putt and miss and then just walk and hit another putt. And you're like, you slow down on those second and third putts. Take your time. And I would just be like, just hit it. And what could have been one or two shots turns into three or four.
Yeah. And you block one right into the woods off a tee on a par five, it's one stroke. You miss a 6-inch putt, it's one stroke.
Yep.
It's the same on the scorecard. One of my favorite movies of all time is Galaxy Quest. There's so many good quotes from that, but the classic cliche quote from that movie is never give up, never surrender. And we've talked a little bit today about the mental game in golf and staying focused, but that idea of never give up, never surrender. How do you make that mentality stick when a round has already gotten away from you? Like if you're in a place where you know this round's not going to count on my handicap, I've had several blow-up holes already, I'm not posting a good score today, what mental tricks What do you do to get yourself back in that round? How do you never surrender, so to speak?
Me.
Go.
So something that I've been doing lately when I find myself in a tricky predicament, and I've mentioned this a little bit, where I can lose a ball pretty far right if I lose my focus in my swing and kind of let my slice come out, and it'll go very far right. And often, on most holes, that means that I'm in a lot of trouble. And something that I used to do is be like, oh, if I hit it way over there, okay, I need to now pull off the hero shot. And that often leads to more trouble, and it compounding errors really gets you.
Yeah.
And something that I've been doing a little bit different, because my scores have been trending in the right direction the past several weeks now, is whenever I hit a poor shot, wherever I end up, where I can find the ball or whether I have to drop it or whatever, I like tell myself when I go to address the ball, it's like I imagine something clicking in my head and it's like anew. It's fresh. And I try and recommit to whatever it is that I'm doing in the moment. And to be honest, it sounds kind of weird. I kind of do that at work a little bit too, because there's times at work where I'll get a change of direction from kind of the higher ups, which is great. You know, we have stuff that we need to get done, but it can be frustrating to get it last minute.
Oh, yeah.
And without some of that preparation, and I feel like a younger me would be like, oh, that's so stupid. Why do we have to do this? And now it's just kind of like, okay, we're changing directions. That's okay. That didn't go the way I expected it to. But now, click, and I can just focus on the task in front of me, hitting a ball, getting my work done, you know. And I don't know if that's a weird thing to do, but it's kind of like whenever it's time to commit to what I'm doing, I'm trying to just basically be all in the moment.
Mm, I like that. On my end, I would say what I try to do when I'm having a bad round is to try and not step back, but like step away from the game and be like, what am I doing here? I'm having a great time with a couple of my best friends in basically a beautiful park. Like, I'm playing a game. Get over the fact that you smacked the ground a little hard or something. Like, it's just a game. Enjoy what you're doing. And then on the next chip, whatever, as I approach it, I try to think to myself, don't think about the consequences of this. Just see, have fun with it. See what happens. And I feel like that my game, once I get to that point, it starts to improve drastically.
That's awesome. Can I interject here with something really silly in the moment? We talked about our rainy round, and we're still like recovering from the wet effects. Like, our clothes are still wet. I just look over at Eric, and he's kind of has his blanket bundled around his waist. But upon first glance, it looks like he's wearing a skirt. And
it's
kilt. I just looked over at Eric and I was like, what is he? Oh, it's a blanket. He must be cold, the poor guy.
Do you know what that makes him? That makes him smarter than us because he's cozy. My legs are quite cold.
He didn't offer anything to us. It's his house.
I asked if you wanted blankets.
I never heard that.
I said, I'm going to go get blankets. Does anyone want any? And then ran upstairs.
Did you hear this?
That's a missed opportunity.
Did you hear this, John Paul?
No, but I hear 12% of anything said in any given room.
That just explains so much.
Mr. Cellophane over here.
All right. I have made a lot of progress on this particular point this year, and I'm going to point to a very specific pragmatic thing that has helped me a ton, and that's the boss battle. I know that sounds silly, but I feel like when you're thinking about individual aspects of the game, there are wins to be had. So even if I've blown the round, maybe I can get a green warden, or maybe I can get a puttergeist, or maybe I can, you know, get out of a sand trap or something of that nature. But I don't even think you have to have the book to keep that mentality in mind. Every single golf shot is an opportunity for greatness.
Mm.
Regardless of what happened before, every single opportunity in golf is an opportunity to do something amazing or memorable or cool. And if I can get myself to think more about, let's do that, I find myself with this boss battle thing kind of focusing my mind that way, even when I'm not having a great round. Like the round we had a couple weeks ago, I was standing on one leg like a wounded flamingo flailing a stick. I played to the very last hole because I still had minor, tiny little goals that I wanted to do. And I ended that round on a par. And it felt great to make a par on the last hole.
A one-legged par.
Like, I think
you look like a beautiful flamingo.
But no, I think that there's something to be learned about that when we go through. Now, this kind of plays into the fact of something we'll talk about on a future episode of the podcast, but we've talked about maybe creating some level two bosses. And one of the ideas that we've been throwing around for a level two boss that I think is brilliant is this idea of parring every hole at our course over the course of a season. Because I don't know if I've parred every hole at our course. I don't know if I have.
You know the ones that you do.
I know because the ones we do them quite often. Because I know them, and some of them, like, I know I can par that hole.
Or you know the one that's your nemesis hole, and so when you do par it, you're like, I got you.
It's huge, right? So, like the ninth hole is a perfect example. It's a very long par three. I can par that hole. I know I can par that hole. I remember the first time I parred that hole, and now that I've parred it, every time I stand on that tee box, I have belief.
Mm.
And so I think that could be a tremendously helpful thing to us to keep us in a game, because even if you have a blow-up round, you can still be thinking about the next hole. All right, regardless of what's happened, can I par the next hole? And I think just getting that mindset coupled with Eric's idea of enjoying the moment, enjoying the challenge, enjoying that shot, that hole, I think that's how you stay in a round.
Well, maybe the next time that one of us are having a particularly tough round and we see that somebody's approaching a shot and not doing their preparation, rather than the goggles do nothing, that's more about the mood.
Mm-hmm.
What if we say, never give up, never surrender, and that's a reminder you're not doing your routine, you're too angry. Reset. Do this again.
Is it a fist over the heart? Is that the salute?
Oh, because
it could be completely silent. Like, you do anything. Just take the fist, thump it over the heart like that at the other guy, and that's the signal. You don't even have to say anything out loud. You just walk up to them and do that. It's like, never give up, never surrender, be in this shot, be in this moment.
What about, we talked about this a couple episodes ago, the leaves from the vine.
Yeah.
Like, that is your chance to kind of pull everything back in.
Yeah, because you don't necessarily need to improve your mood to know that you need to reset that shot.
Yeah.
Because if you're not doing your routine, it's just going to keep compounding and you're going to get angrier. So you can still be angry. You don't need to do a reply, but just be like, okay, yep, I need to reset. I think that's a good...
Yeah, I like that. So, and speaking of the boss battles and, keeping our score in the GIN app and writing down these little mini accomplishments, honestly, it takes me back to a quote from Adam Savage from Mythbusters, where, remember, kids, the only difference between screwing around and science is writing it down.
Yeah.
It gives us a history of what to look at, of where we were and what we've been able to accomplish.
Oh, totally. And on a quick side note, I mean, looking at our handicaps and looking where our games are trending and basically where we're doing, do I think that sitting around this table drinking Birdie Bevs and talking about the game of golf has improved me as a golfer? Heck yeah. I think it absolutely has. I think we're better golfers than we were when we started this journey, and I think we'll continue to improve.
Are you a better person?
That might be a bit deep. I'm golfing, I'm a better person.
Yes, on the course he is. I will say that for me in particular, the Green Warden, is that the one where you get up and down?
Yeah.
Him in particular, it took me a while to get him, and I focused a lot more on my chipping. It was less about, did I do a bad chip, and more about, how do I improve this so that I can beat that green-haired or green-eyed jerk?
Yeah.
Yeah. It gives a target.
Yes.
And something to focus on. Because golf, I think we often think about, I've got to have a perfect drive and then a perfect approach and then I've got to have a perfect putt. And having the boss battles breaks down the game into little sub-segments of, today I'm going to focus basically on my driving, or I'm going to focus on my chipping in a very fun way that I think resonates with nerds like us.
And I started off thinking about it as, well, here's another way of showing that I'm not as good as these guys, because these guys are going to get all these and I'm just going to be far behind.
That hasn't been true at all.
But I started to look at it a different way and be like, no, this is just a fun little game I can play within the game. And it did help. Like the Clive, when I was in a bunker, it was like, before, every time I thought, oh, I'm in a bunker, this is going to be hard. But now when I'm in it, I'm like, oh yeah, I have a chance for a Clive.
And even when we don't have a book to keep track of these things going forward, I think that whenever we golf, we'll forever remember. Like, I'm in the sand and be like, there is a bunker beast to be taken down.
Yep.
Because
it happened today, because you got the nastiest plug I've seen in a bunker in a long time on that par 5. That was embedded in the lip of the bunker right up against the edges, a nightmare bunker shot. And he looked at it for 1 second, said, oh no, bunker. And immediately the next words that came out, I was like, Clive. And he went after it. And that's it. That's got to be the mentality.
Birdie Bev, time for another Birdie Bev.
You guys thirsty?
So okay.
John Paul gets to pour because he knows what it is.
I do. So you guys have to close your eyes. Here we go.
Okay, closing my eyes.
I love that we hide it in a cooler so that it stays cold. I got to tell you that the moment I opened this, there was a fantastic whiff. I have high hopes. This smells excellent.
Can we open our eyes now?
You may.
Okay.
You got to smell this before you sip it. It smells fantastic.
Ooh, that is a good root beer smell. Diet? No diet? What is this?
This is not diet. This is a full-on root beer.
That would have been my guess based solely on smell. locked in.
I'm locked in.
Okay, I got it.
Man, I'm nursing that. That's lovely.
I like that a lot. Really
good. Okay, flip them over.
Seven.
7.5 for me.
Oh, I'm way higher than you. I gave eight and a half.
Wow.
I gave that an 8.5.
I was on the verge of an 8. I really was. And I remember some of our really, really good ones. I would love having this.
Yeah.
What? Give the reveal. What is it?
Okay. This is Sparky's Fresh Draft Root Beer.
Wow.
It is made with carbonated filtered water, pure cane sugar, honey, which you can taste very
clearly.
You can
totally tell, yeah.
Yeah, natural and imitation flavorings, spices, phosphoric acid, and caramel color.
Okay. Give me another hit, please.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you lucky... Another hit of the super delicious root beers. Let me tell you what I like about it. I'll give you the carb count. Okay. The carb count on this, as far as I can tell, this is bereft of any nutritional information.
Oh, illegal root beer. My favorite.
Okay. That is a good root beer.
It has just the right amount of bite to it. It's not like a Barks. It balances that smooth and bitiness really well.
It really does.
Can I go to an 8? Is that loud?
Yeah, I'm gonna adjust mine to an 8 as well.
Let me tell you why I like it so much, and I'll tell you it's exactly what you were talking about with balance. But here's the thing, it's all about how a root beer starts and how it finishes. This starts with bite, but finishes mellow.
It does,
and that's rare. Like, it almost is always the other way. You get the hit of sweet, and then it kind of sours on your palate, and you get that acridness afterwards. All of the kind of sharp, bitter notes are right at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
and it finishes with that smooth honey. And that honey just coats your tongue. It's lovely. It strikes the balance really, really well for me. I can see how some guys might think that this is a little too sweet. It suits my palate really well. I like that.
Yeah, I agree. Great. Great job, Sparky.
Thanks again for listening to For the Record. We're so glad that you made it this far into the episode. As always, we would love to hear from you if you have any comments or questions or suggestions for us. Send them our way, ForTheRecord.com, F-O-R-E, TheRecord.com is the best place you can get in contact with us, or on our socials, ForTheRecord_golf.
Make sure you like, comment, and subscribe.